Is that word?
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways.
I think it's indicates.
Indicative? Is that the word you were looking
that
for?
That is a good word, Kristen Bright.
A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bright does not believe in friendship.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, and I do believe in friendship. Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, Jane Matinere.
And to you.
I actually thought that you were going to go with this week when I was like, Matinere. That would have been a... Maybe swap that in for a new open. But yes, it is Wednesday, so Mr. Greg Bach... Comedian, bear wrestler, good human, resident male voice on Wednesdays is back.
It's about time the men finally get their say.
Give this man a microphone. There is not enough white men with microphones in this world, so we give one once a week to Mr. Greg Bach. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling good. I'm in my new pair of jeans, my new pair of sneakers. I'm just feeling fresh.
I'm feeling fresh, too. I'm feeling... You know, I didn't know what to expect from the State of the Union. Sometimes these things can be boring. And I was pretty entertained last night. I don't know how the three of you felt, but we're going to talk a lot about the State of the Union today. Yeah. At 11:30, our good friend Dan Schaefer is going to join. He is the publisher, creator, founder of the Recombobulation Area. He is writing a column this week on the Supreme Court race. Because obviously we're spending a lot of time talking about that. So he will be joining us to give us his insights and then probably go back to some of the sillier parts of things that happened last night.
And there were many.
Some of the outfits, really, you know, someone thought that they were Marie Antoinette, I think, as far as the sleeves were audacious.
They were bringing British wedding vibe.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but at some point... At some point today, the president, fresh off his speech last night, is in Wisconsin. He is going to be in Dane County. Specifically, I think he is going to be in DeForest, we heard this morning. And we, here on Civic Media, are going to air it live. And so we are waiting, you know, just like last night, these things never start on time. And so we are standing by. Terry Bell is going to be there live, our news director. And once we get word that the speech is going to start, we will cut this program. We'll cut over to the live stream of that speech. If it cuts early and it's before 2 o'clock, we'll come back. So we're going to be a little flexible today.
Yeah. Well, we got to be ready to pivot.
We're going to be ready to pivot, which I tried to do my stretching this morning. I try to do that sometimes where I wake up and I give myself enough time to get ready for the show, and I try to do a little, like, 10 to 15 minutes of yoga. I'm only flexible metaphorically, let's say. I felt a little tight this morning, but let's jump right into it. President Biden gave his second State of the Union address, this time before a divided Congress, and of course, we are going to talk about it because there is a lot to unpack. So, I guess... I would summarize this as an attempt for bipartisanship, a lot of kitchen table issues, and honestly, I'm really impressed with his crowd work.
I was very, very impressed with his energy, his excitement, actually. Not just the energy he had, but the excitement that he had, too. I felt like he was very excited to give the speech, and... In his head, he thinks, we're doing all these things together. Why are these people over here booing me? I don't get it. But no, I really enjoyed it.
But I think, because let's just kick off with the best moment of the night, because I think he did get it. I think he potentially even planned it because, I mean, I think we all can agree that the most talked about and pivotal moment of the speech was when he brought up there are certain Republicans who would like to sunset certain federal programs like Social Security or Medicaid, and that drew immediate jeers. I can't even reenact it. Let's just play the clip.
Some of my Republican friends want to take the economy hostage. I get it, unless I agree to their economic plans.
All of you at home should know what those plans are. Instead of making the wealthy pay their fair share, some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Let me give you, anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy of the proposal. That means Congress doesn't vote. Well, I'm glad to see you. And I tell you, I enjoy conversion. You know, it means if Congress doesn't keep the programs the way they are, they'd go away. Other Republicans say, I'm not saying it's a majority of you. I don't even think it's even a significant, but it's being proposed by individuals. I'm not politely not naming them, but it's being proposed by some of you. Look, folks, the idea is that we're not going to be moved into being threatened to default on the debt if we don't respond. So, folks, as we all apparently agree, Social Security and Medicare is off the books now, right? They're not to be stopped. All right. I'm ready. We got unanimity. Social Security and Medicare are a lifeline for millions of seniors. Americans have to pay into them from the very first paycheck they started. So tonight, let's all agree, and apparently we are, let's stand up for seniors. Stand up and show them. We'll not cut Social Security. We will not cut Medicare.
And that, my friends, is some verbal jujitsu.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting to witness because I wasn't exactly paying attention at that moment when he said, when they started booing, I'm like, what happened? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is someone brought up after the fact is in 2009, Representative Joe Wilson mm-hmm. shouted, "You lied to President Obama" during his speech and was censured.
Yeah.
And last night was just a comedy club free for all. It was like the
United Kingdom like Parliament.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
Like British Parliament yeah. as far as
Can I just say though, because I was watching it too, and I thought at one moment he's made a mistake by even engaging with those people, and then he completely turned it around.
Yeah.
And there was a columnist who said this morning, the GOP was like a group of lemmings running at him, and President Biden led them right off the cliff.
Yeah.
It was a thing of beauty.
Because just for context, this who he's talking about is Rick Scott.
Yeah.
Because Rick Scott, during the midterms, is presented a proposal as far as sunsetting federal programs after 5 years. And Rick Scott, despite looking like Skeletor, does have a lot of power. and so that is what I understand. And even this morning, Scott doubles down on sunsetting all federal programs after Biden's jab. So he's not backing off on this.
No.
That's who he's talking about. And so all of those Republicans can jeer as much as they want that we're not doing that, we're not doing that. All right, well, don't vote for it. But there's someone in your caucus who has a fair amount of power who does want this.
Yeah, I was shocked, but not, I guess, after a while watching him, like, oh, they're just going to sit here and heckle him for 50 plus minutes and be proud of themselves with no real substance to back it up with what they're saying, with what they're doing. I mean, like I said, I like the speech a lot. There's a lot of energy. There was a lot of focus. Not even from people I vote for give great State of the Union addresses sometimes, but this was a good one, and the entertainment value was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing though was him when he does, you know, he recognizes people. By the way, Bono's in the audience.
Which, do you know why he was there? I had to look this up.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No, I don't.
Did
he get a medal?
It wasn't a medal. So, because a bunch of people, because they never explained why he was there, right? They never acknowledged him. But of course, Nicholas Kristof responded to someone on Twitter saying Bono was there because of the Biden reference to Bush's landmark program against AIDS announced 20 years ago. Bono played a central role in that.
That is one of the big things that people try when they try to brush off George Bush Jr.'s record and legacy. They're like, he helped AIDS in Africa. It's like, we had nowhere to go but up with this one. I mean, but when he's calling on all these people and he's mentioning Ukraine, he says we have the Ukraine ambassador here, and he is like watching someone try to go for a big jump, and it's just at the very end. They're like, nope, I can't do it. He couldn't say her name. He's like, and then he goes,
please stand up.
You. It's like anytime you see somebody that you don't you recognize but you don't know their name, you're like, hey, you.
Well, you think he knew her name? He just maybe got a little nervous about pronouncing it.
Oksana Markarova, and I'm looking at that right now. When you do the State of the Union, any state of the, you write for a long time.
Yeah.
You practice. It's just to me, like, it's just last minute. Jerry's like, and it, ooh, that lady up there should stand up now.
That's hilarious. So, I mean, I would say he did, especially because we're going to talk about it later. We have there's so much, and we're already only a minute left in this first segment. So we're going to come back from this first segment. Still talk about more of the stuff that was in the speech, more of the stuff that talking about what he's done, talking about the stuff that he wants to do. Granted, I might be biased, but a lot of that stuff seems pretty common sense in compared to the response from a certain smoky-eyed individual who it seems hard for her to smile. And so we have so much more to unpack on this. But also, we'd love to hear from you as far as what were your takeaways, what were your highlights, what were the parts that you thought were embarrassing, what were the parts that you thought were really funny? Because that's what we like to do on this show, is also find the comedy gold in all of this.
Find
the funny. Because certainly, I mean, we haven't even touched on this spat between Mr. George Santos. And who did we think? Did we really think the 70-somethings Mormon was going to be the one to try to put him in his place? But yeah, so there's so much to talk about with the State of the Union. We would love to hear from you. 844-967-2789. That is 844-96-PARTY. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
With Kristen Bry on the Civic Media Network. We got Jane Matinere on the board. We got Mr. Greg Bach, a nudist colony founder and comedian.
We're called Naturalists. Thank you very much.
Greg dared me to do two truths and a lie every time I introduce him today, so we'll see how good I am.
Oh, good challenge.
There are things in my life that have happened that I tell people all the time, like, what do you think is a lie? And every time they say that's a lie, I'm like, you're wrong. Because my life has been interesting.
Well, we will maybe have to play that later in the show, but we have too much to talk about with State of the Union. Coming up in the next segment, Mr. Dan Schaefer is going to be here. But for now, let's keep rolling as far as moments from last night. So we were saying that there was an effort for bipartisanship, I think, on his side. He highlighted a lot of the bipartisan bills that were passed. And even at the beginning, I think it was the only time I saw Kevin McCarthy smile was when he acknowledged, do we have that? Oh, shoot. So we have, there was basically a line where he said, I don't want to ruin your reputation, but I'm really looking forward to working with you.
That was a great line.
And he was so gracious. Oh. He was just so gracious. Was the former president ever that gracious?
He's currently not gracious at this moment.
I think he tweeted out. No, well, he didn't tweet. What do you? What is the verb?
For he truthed.
For Truth Social, he truthed.
He truthed all over the internet.
I saw a screenshot of it that he was not a fan of how many times he said folks.
Like, all right.
I feel like I've now gotten used to that between Biden and Evers. I don't know who says folks more often.
Oh, Oplander does.
You think so?
Yeah. That's in our DNA. It's ingrained in us.
I feel like they both, I feel like it might be a tie. They both say it a lot.
I just think it's funny that that's what he transfixed on. Like the whole thing, the whole speech. And he's just like, I don't like how much he said folks.
I know. I'm sure he said other things. Let's be honest. I'm currently not on Truth Social. So,
well, I mean, you're smart. What?
I mean, if I had more, in the same way that I subscribe to different conservative, like I said, so we were talking yesterday about Empower Wisconsin folding. I still haven't heard how, why, any kind of explanation, but I had subscribed to their newsletter and I followed them on, just like I follow Wisconsin Right Now on different social media, because it's good to see the
opposing
range of opinions and ways that things get talked about. But Truth Social, in the same way that I haven't even attempted to find an alternative to Twitter as they started popping up as Elon took over.
Yeah.
I just don't have the time to be on another platform, especially one that feels like I'm just going to want to throw my phone all the time. I don't, you know, there's certain boundaries you have to have.
Yeah, of course.
So, but as far as the things that he actually, most of the speech, and I did misspeak yesterday, he has not officially announced that he's running in 2024.
No. Not yet.
I think I said that he did yesterday. Mostly because I feel like it's been very implied.
Hey, the internet getter.
But he has not officially. But I think considering the amount of the speech that was focused on what they've done in these 2 years. And they went through a lot. So he touted the booming job market, which is majorly what I think people are thinking his speech today in DeForest is going to be focused on, because like the jobs report for January was insane. It was like, how does this make sense? But he acknowledged inflation, calling it a global issue, said it was coming down, talked about the Inflation Reduction Act. He talked about record low unemployment and talked about the infrastructure investment. I'm trying to think of what else.
He talked about chips being made in America.
Yep, talked about chips being made in America.
Talked about making the tax system more fair.
Yes.
More fair. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a good line as far as, let's play that one.
We got to finish the job. We pay for these investments in our future by finally making the wealthiest and biggest corporations begin to pay their fair share. Just begin. Look, I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist, but pay your fair share. I think a lot of you at home agree with me and many people that you know the tax system is not fair. It is not fair.
I like it when he leaned in, he goes, it's not fair. you're like, okay, back up, Bidey. All right.
Well, and he also, in the point of that, there's billionaires who pay less in taxes than nurses.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, through, this is why being a CPA, that's what your job is. It's kind of like we were talking yesterday. Did you see the article as far as Judge Jennifer Doro? I'm sure we'll talk about this with Dan in the next segment, is hiding her biography.
What?
Because she spent 8 years as a defense attorney at a private law firm. And some of the people, like if you check CCAP, some of the cases and the clients that she had, which was her job, is to get them the best deal possible, and whether it's plea, lower sentences, off entirely. But it wasn't like white collar crime. It was some people who had done, and so supposedly the assumption is they're hiding that because that makes her not tough on crime, despite that being her job. And so for a CPA, thank you for staying with me on that tangent. For a CPA, it's like it's their job to get the best taxes for their clients.
Yeah.
And we've just created so many loopholes for that to be a thing that there's lots of very wealthy people who certainly are not paying a proportional amount of their income. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you said she was hiding her biography, I literally thought she would release a book about her life.
Oh, God.
You know, it's, sometimes you don't have enough coffee, Kristen, and you're tired. And you come out real big and strong at the beginning of the show, and you start to just crumble.
Well, do you think you can make a coffee in 2.5 minutes?
No, I'm not going to bother with that.
You're not
right
going to bother
I'll
with
wait
it?
I'll wait until Papa Joe gets on the radio.
Okay. Well, do you know that coffee, you know that caffeine doesn't actually give you energy?
Oh, God. Okay. You know what? Let's talk about the State of the Union address right now. I don't want to be, well, actually by somebody today. I don't need that in my life.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a break from State of the Union talk, but there is still a lot more we want to get into. So if you're interested in talking, giving your talking points about State of the Union, you can do so at the top of the next hour at 12. But when we come back, Mr. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area is going to be here, and we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. Shut your face, Greg Bach. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Listen to me, because I am the judge, and you can plainly see. I want a big round table when I get there. I won't sit down to wonder square. I'm gonna lay down the law that better not budge. I bust some head because I am the judge.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Kristen Bry. We got Jane Madnair on the board. Greg Bach is here because it's Wednesday. You are welcome to join the conversation. As always, 844-967-2789. But now we are welcoming back. It's been a minute. I think it's been a minute since this guest has been on the show, but very good friend of the show, Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area, is here. And you said at the break that you had some better boundaries than we did, and you actually did not watch the State of the Union last night.
Yeah, I didn't watch it live. I'm planning to, you know, wait and binge it, you know, all at once, so I can really catch up on my own terms. You know, that's how I like to watch TV. I don't like to watch live TV. I'll just wait and binge it later. So
I'm gonna read and watch all 243 State of the Union addresses. I can't wait to get to Fillmore.
Yeah, I'm at Bush now, so I've got a little bit of
Bush one and Bush two.
Yeah, one, two. You know,
two. Well, welcome back to the show. I feel like it's been a minute since we had you on, but
it has been a minute. It's good to see you all.
Good to see you as well. So we obviously are keeping track of everything that's happening in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, trying to remind people that it is less than 2 weeks away when it comes to the primary on February 21st. But you are probably much more in the weeds than even we are. So wanted to bring you on, get some updates as far as what you are hearing, talk the people you're talking to, because the things that I'm collecting is it feels like there's a fair amount of infighting happening between the two conservative candidates. Is that what you're also hearing?
Yeah, certainly seems to be much more infighting happening on the right among the two candidates in this race than among the two candidates on the left. And, you know, you really don't have to dig too far to see that the right is getting close to freakout mode over the state Supreme Court race. Like, I think the news last week when Daniel Kelly said he would not endorse Jennifer Doro if she were to, you know, emerge as the one conservative to go towards the general election, I think that's a pretty big deal. I think that is, you know, indicative of some real, you know, fault lines on the right in this race when it comes to Daniel Kelly and Jennifer Doro. And I think there is some, you don't have to look too far to see that there is some real concern over, you know, what this infighting might mean for the conservative candidate's chances in the general election. You know, and I also think it's pretty interesting that much of the complaints about Jennifer Doro from the Daniel Kelly camp, you know, have kind of alluded to the fact that they, you know, are upset with Brian Hagedorn, the conservative justice who has been a swing vote in many cases in the current makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He sided with the three liberals on the case with that the Trump campaign tried to overturn the presidential election results. So, you know, a real extremist, really got to worry about this guy on the state Supreme Court. One of the only conservatives to win a statewide election in recent years, and somebody who did not try to overturn the 2020 election results. Really shows where their concerns lie in this race.
And so with the, we'll call it divide, is it similar camps as we saw in the fall between Clayfish and Michaels as far as who's backing which candidate for Supreme Court? Is it a similar, like, southeastern Republican conservative versus outstate rural conservatives? Or where is kind of, like, who's backing which horse when it comes to more of establishment Republican and conservative interest groups?
Yeah, I feel like what I have seen, you know, I feel like some more of the Michaels camp people have backed Doro in this race, and some more of the Clayfish people have been backing Daniel Kelly. And I think, you know, Kelly has endorsements from people like Rebecca Bradley, who are, you know, kind of the super conservative wing of the party. I think that's been pretty interesting. It's not along exactly the same lines as kind of the Clayfish Michaels breakdown. But I think, you know, it's, I think there's an electability conversation happening. Yeah. Because I think, you know, I think a lot of the conservatives see Daniel Kelly is perhaps aligning more closely to those, the base, where Doro could be the type of candidate to, you know, potentially win over some of those swing voters. But then again, once you look into her record, look into some of her views, she's not exactly a centrist by any means either.
Well, and this is what we talked about yesterday, is even how they're trying, whoever's running her campaign, because they've basically wiped her bio from being able to be easily accessible from, like, the Waukesha Circuit Court website. It basically just says that she has a 26-year legal career. She doesn't have a LinkedIn profile. Like, it takes more digging to actually get through, like, what has she, before she was appointed by Walker in 2012, what did her legal career actually include? And so is it, apparently, this was from Bruce Murphy's article in Urban Milwaukee yesterday, like, she spent 8 years as a defense attorney. And if they're trying to hide that because they want to position her as tough on crime, despite the fact that that's not the kind of cases that the Wisconsin Supreme Court rules on.
Yeah, I think, you know, it seems like their strategy is to just play it extremely safe until the primary, and just go on her name recognition that she gained from the Waukesha Parade case last year. Because, you know, thinking of the one public forum that had all four candidates with it, at the Wispolitics Forum in Madison that I covered, you know, she played it extremely safe in that forum, didn't really say anything, read a lot of pre-prepared, you know, remarks from a binder. And I think they're just trying to play it extremely safe until the primary. I still think she is probably the candidate who will emerge as the conservative in this race.
Really?
But I do think she is in a worse position now than she was a couple months ago because of the infighting on the right and the criticisms that she has received from the Daniel Kelly backers. You know, there was a very interesting column in the Waukesha Freeman a few weeks ago from Rebecca Bradley ripping her performance, ripping Doro's performance in that public forum. So I think, you know, some of her rising star that came out of that Waukesha Parade case when she got some national attention has certainly dimmed in the past couple of months. But I do think, you know, just based on name recognition alone, she's probably the candidate who will be, you know, the conservative to emerge from the primary.
Well, that was something we talked about last week, too, is that the problem with these candidates is that with Judge Doro is that they just sort of she presided over the Brooks case and then slammed the gavel down. They grabbed her by the robe and said, "You're running now. Goodbye." And they didn't really do any real vetting on her. Like, she doesn't have a real history to be found, and that's it. And I feel like that's gonna maybe shoot them themselves in the foot. And people just.
But then at the same time, Daniel Kelly has a record, yeah. And I don't think that's the type of record that is a particularly strong one, especially in a statewide race. You know, it's maybe the type of thing where you play to the base in the primary, and then, you know, that they have those challenges in a general election. He might have more ability to win a primary than he would in a general.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly independent column on politics in Wisconsin and southeastern Wisconsin, and we're talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So let's shift gears to the other side of the aisle in this nonpartisan race. And I know on its face, there certainly doesn't seem to be the same kind of infighting that's happening between the two liberal candidates. There's been I've seen few endorsements coming from different groups as far as who's backing them. I've seen some, but not many. And the big difference I see here is, at least in the last funding report, Janet Protasiewicz had a lot more money than Everett. She was by far and away the leader of the pack versus Everett Mitchell having been the furthest behind.
Yeah, and I think that's really an important thing. Like, we talk over and over again, just like we cannot overstate the importance of this race. And when you look at the fundraising, you know, Protasiewicz raised close to $1 million in 2022 after running the whole year. That was a lot. But Everett Mitchell raised about $115,000, and he was running the whole course of the race too. I just don't know if that is enough to really be competitive in a race like this. You know, I think he's, you know, from following his interviews and his campaign and things like that, he is a really compelling candidate and a really compelling speaker. But look, just to put it in context, these are Tom Nelson level fundraising numbers.
Yeah.
It's just not on the same level as, it's just not in the same stratosphere as where Protasiewicz is, in the fundraising. And I think also too, there, you know, the endorsement game is a really important part of this, because these candidates don't have, you know, the name recognition that you might have in a race for governor or Senate and other types of statewide races. And I think while Mitchell has gotten a lot of really important individual endorsements, he hasn't been getting a whole lot of organizational endorsements lately. Protasiewicz has picked up several key union endorsements over the last few weeks. Those don't seem to be coming Mitchell's way. And I think that is an important factor, because it's not only, you know, a sign that, you know, these organizations will be aligning with a certain candidate. It also influences turnout. Like, those organizations will have turnout operations. So having those kind of organizational endorsements, I think, is really important to show just what kind of coalition a candidate can build. But also, this is a spring election in an off year, and turnout is going to be extremely important. And if you have, you know, groups like unions that will be contacting their members and encouraging them to go to the polls, you know, that's going to be a big factor in a spring election in an off year when people are in Wisconsin are exhausted from the political process, just had this high profile midterm election a couple months ago. So you're going to need to just run that turnout machine, and having those organizational endorsements is a part of that.
And who are some of the endorsements? To put you on the spot, because I actually hadn't, this was information I didn't know as far as if it was unions, because I had known that Wisconsin Democrats said they were not going to endorse. I don't think Planned Parenthood is, they said that they were not going to endorse. And so I hadn't heard of some of the key endorsements coming down.
Yeah, AFSCME, IBEW, a number of those unions that are really active in turnout and campaigns and Wisconsin laborers. You know, so I'm just looking through the list here. She has gotten a number of those in recent weeks, and I do think that is an important thing. And, you know, Citizen Action of Wisconsin issued endorsement, but it was a dual endorsement. So they endorsed both Protasiewicz and Mitchell. I don't understand the dual endorsement trend. That seems to be happening on the right, too. There was a couple, like, pro-life groups that endorsed both Doro and Kelly. It's kind of like that New York Times editorial board endorsement where they endorsed both Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar a couple years ago, back in the before times. But, you know, it's, I think those organizational endorsements are important.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, I'd like to get your thoughts on turnout whether it's for primary and, but more importantly, for general. And we'll maybe then to do, as we usually do, a little basketball talk. Our guest this half hour is Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Paris, to stop this war. All those cats got to listen to me because I am the judge and you can plainly see. I want a big round table when I get there. I won't sit down to wonder square. I'm going to lay down the law. They better not budge. I bust some head because I am the judge.
He is the judge. He is the judge.
Wine and chase with gin. Won't take long, that's a miss, my guess. I have you out of this doggone mess. I set up cable to Bolly and Mac. Let them know I'm coming back. Sit right down with Rockin' Nicks. Teach them both some of Pigmy's tricks. You son of a gun, you. I am the judge. I am the judge. Everybody knows that I am.
Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are here with Greg Bach because it's Wednesday. Jane Metnair is on the board, and our guest for this half hour is Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation area, and we are talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And, you know, it's interesting because when I had first gotten back to Wisconsin, it was right as we were, you know, that epic, who can forget the turnout of the April 2020 election where
so
people were
amazing.
Standing in lines and... It was the last time we had a Supreme Court race, and Jill Crosby won handedly. And I don't remember what turnout was for that because I remember it was, you know, there were some crazy circumstances that people were trying to vote through. But it was, I keep bringing up this stat because I think it's so important in that Wisconsin in the fall is typically top five voter turnout. Like we turn out in the fall really well. And as far as we, like in comparison to other states, in the spring, not so much. So our lowest of the last 22 years in the fall was 44%, and our highest in the spring is 34%. And so, in our world, your world, Dan, my world, as far as the people we work with, we're friends with, our social media echo chamber is very much like vote, 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 vote. Now, that's not everyone's reality. And so is there anything to indicate that we could have a larger than usual turnout this spring?
Yeah, I think just the overwhelming focus of this race, I think it's going to, once we get past the primary, we're going to have national attention for this race. It's going to be the most expensive race we've seen in anything like this. It's just going to be a very unique, very high profile race. It's going to, and I think once we get past the primary, and we very likely, not impossible that we would have two candidates of the same political alignment emerge, but you know, very unlikely. Once we have that kind of traditional right left dichotomy, I think it's going to really ramp up over the final weeks. But I do think, you know, there has been some interesting trends over the past couple of years when you think about turnout. So I think, you know, historically, when we think about lower turnout elections, that they would benefit Republicans. That, you know, when you have the lower, they have a more reliable voter base. So that when you have lower turnout races, that tends to, you know, elect Republicans. And I think the way that certain fault lines in politics have been shifting over the past few years, I think some of those more reliable voters who will go to the polls in every election have started to shift more towards Democrats. Some of those more affluent suburban voters that have been going towards Democrats in recent election cycles. So, you know, I think some political strategists and behind the scenes people will say that, hey, it's not, you know, the high turnout race doesn't always benefit Democrats anymore. And the low turnout rates doesn't always benefit Republicans anymore. And I think, you know, you look at, you know, kind of some Milwaukee County suburbs, Wau County suburbs that have been shifting. And in particularly in a place like Dane County, where you always have sky high turnout. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have that Dane County turnout machine be a real factor in this spring election, because I think you're going to have so much attention to it. And you have some of those voters that are more reliably go to the polls, that are kind of part of the shifting Democratic coalition now.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I think what you're saying as far as the national attention, because that's already started, because I think Politico, New York Times, where else have I seen different like national publications being like, this is the most important yep. race that you're not, you didn't
Washington
know about.
Post, Washington I know Pod Save America did a big segment yep. about it this week. Like it's definitely going to be everywhere. But I think once some of the outside groups can really, you know, back up the Brinks truck for one particular candidate. You know, you have like groups like Planned Parenthood that will be putting a lot into this race. I know Eric Holder's group on redistricting. I think there's a lot of chatter about them putting a lot of money into this race once there is a dedicated liberal candidate. You know, they don't want to kind of splinter the race in any time before that. But once there is a candidate, I do think it's going to be Protasiewicz to back. I think that, you know, the money will really start to flow.
Absolutely. Well, are there any other, because this is not the only race that is happening in the spring. There's lots of very important mayoral races and school boards. And there's also a special election for District 8 in the state Senate. Is there anything else, any other updates on any of those races of things to watch or things that you're interested in?
Yeah, I think the District 8 state Senate race is a really interesting one, because I think there has been some campaigning that kind of goes back to a strategy the Democrats employed last year, where they're trying to elevate the candidate that they think might be the best chance for them to beat in a general election. And I think in this case, it is Janelle Branchon that Democrats think that they are going to have a better chance of winning against in a general election. So I think the Republican Senate Leadership Committee is backing Dan Knodel in this race, who not exactly a centrist by any means, but maybe
but
a bit
Janelle
closer. but also not Janelle Branchon, exactly. So I think that primary is really going to be an interesting one to watch. There's the one Democrat running in that race is not facing a primary challenge, Jody Habush-Sinikin. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. But I think, you know, if Branchon wins the Republican primary there, I think Democrats will have a pretty good shot of winning an upset. Like, it's a very gerrymandered district.
Yeah.
It's a district that leaned right before redistricting and leans even further to the right now. But that is part of those shifting suburbs. It's part of those shifting suburbs, and it includes places like Whitefish Bay that have gone very far to the left in recent years. So I think that is going to be a really interesting primary to watch.
Absolutely. All right. And then the last question with the minute that we have left, big, and we all know that you're a big NBA fan, huge Bucks fan, but there was some NBA news last night. Did you watch, when you weren't watching the State of the Union, were you watching LeBron break the record?
I did watch LeBron break the record.
Did you stay up late enough to watch it? I had to go to bed after he broke it. I didn't watch the end of the game.
I'm a night owl, and I'm usually up at that time anyway. So,
what
so
record
that's
did he break?
All time. You really?
I don't know. I was taking notes about the history of our country.
You can tell him, Dan.
He broke Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record as the all-time scoring champ in NBA history. So, pretty remarkable achievement. And I think, you know, I was thinking about the big picture of LeBron. He came into the league with so much hype,
mm-hmm.
and it's so hard to live up to those expectations when you have so much hype. And he totally has. He's
really
probably exceeded them. You know, the hype of being the next Jordan, and he has been that and then some. And it's pretty remarkable.
Even though he doesn't play for us, it's hard to take that away from him as far as how good he's been for 20 years. All right, Dan Schaefer, we got to let you go, but thank you for joining us. We'll have you back soon. Check out the recombobulation area. It is excellent. We'll be back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.